as he was working at this place, he also he was working on using a method of treating illnesses by using electric shocks, which was basically he took a piece of copper wire with electricity running through it and touched you with it. And while he was testing this on a really good friend of his, he was in the other room and he heard his friend screaming through the wire. And so that was where he got this awesome idea of, I should make this a telephone. And in 1854, he demonstrated the first electronic telephone in New York City. And then I think 1871, he filed a patent caveat, which is basically him saying, I'm not patenting this right now, but I swear I'm going too soon. And he ended up not getting it, as you're probably aware. Probably about 10 years before he actually filed his patent caveat, there was a guy named Philip Rice, who I swear wasn't this blurry in real life. He made his own kind of telephone, which was actually made from a piece of pig intestine, a little platinum cube, and a cigar box. Which, amazingly enough, pointless and stupid, he used to transmit his voice 340 feet, which was pretty good. But as you can probably imagine, that didn't catch on very much. You'd kind of have to slaughter a pig every time you wanted to use the phone. And of, I mean, of course, everyone knows this guy, Alexander Graham Bell, who, you know, he patented the telephone. He, in Canada, they still call think of him as the inventor since he's from Canada. He actually made and patented his telephone in 1875, I think. And it was kind of unique in the fact that the mouthpiece and the earpiece were one thing. It was just like a little tube, and it looked like that. But it was really cool. I mean, there's not much to say about it. It was interesting. But now we're actually going to jump forward and talk about payphones, which is probably why you guys are here. The first payphone was invented in 1889 by a guy named William Gray, and I can't find any pictures of him online anywhere. But it looked something like this. This is he made. It was installed in a bank in Hartford, Connecticut, which was cool. But what made this phone really interesting is that it's a post-pay phone, where basically, originally, you'd pick up the phone, dial your number, talk to the operator, make your call, and then pay after you made your call. So that's the second worst idea in the timeline of bad ideas for telecommunications. The first, of course, being using a piece of pig intestine. Really, I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory why this is a bad idea. I mean, you know, you just make your call and then leave. If you can outrun the guy who owns the phone, you should be good. And while this guy plays with my... Yeah, that's probably what it is. Are we good?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So yeah, you can imagine that, you know, you just don't pay the money for it, and that's cool. And a lot of people did that. So about 10 years later, the phone company decides, hey, this isn't good. We should have done something about this 10 years ago. And so I believe it was Western Electric made what's called the number 5 coin collector, which I don't have a picture of. Basically, that all it does is it makes it so that you have to pay before it will let you dial out, which was good for the phone company and bad for people who were just trying to get a free phone call out of the thing. So that was cool. Now, the payphone, the first 8 or so that it was around got really, really and actually, around 1902, there were 81,000 payphones in America in the first 8 or 9 years of its existence, which is good, all things considered. It prompted the phone companies to decide that, well, originally all these payphones were inside a building somewhere. So they were like, what if we put these things outside so that people can, like, just walk up and use them wherever? And so they did that. And the first one was actually installed in Ohio, I think it was Cincinnati, don't quote me on that, in 1905, which was pretty cool. So anyways, time kind of goes on, and not a lot changes for payphones. There's big changes in the telephone industry. We, in 1915, we make the first call across. 1935, we make the first call around the world, which is even cooler. And stuff really started to change. You could call, you know, all around the world. And around 1861, probably the biggest change at that time was the phone companies introduced what was called direct distance dialing, which I have a fun little advertisement here. Basically, direct distance dialing was, instead of looking for your buddy in Africa, instead of picking phone and having your operator call the operator in Akron, who then called your friend in Akron, you picked up the phone and just directly called your friend, and you got him. And it was probably cheaper, I'm going to assume, because you didn't have to wait for 45 minutes to get connected. It's a really cool thing. That kind of brought the big movement in the what was considered by most people to be the golden age of phone phreaking to start out. We got another one here. It's for the video one. Okay. So yeah, we started with what people generally refer to as the golden age of phone phreaking, which was cool. Nobody's really sure, or at least I haven't been able to pinpoint it down, who the first phone freaks were, or who the official first one was. It was kind of more of an instance of, you know, here's somebody over here that's doing something that's really cool, and at the same time, here's somebody over here doing the same kind of thing, and they just don't really know each other, so it's not really, nobody really knows who the first one was. It's kind of assumed that there were two guys, one in New York named Bill. That's all the information that I can find on him, which makes it really hard to find, like, pictures and stuff of him, because Bill turns up a lot of searches on Google. And then there was a guy named Joe Ingresia, who more recently changed his name legally to Joy Bubbles, which is quite interesting. But Joe Ingresia was kind of cool because he was blind. And, they both discovered that they could make this sound, that when they did it, it made this phone do a really cool thing. And that was the infamous 2600 hertz tone, which has kind of formed what phone freaking is today. Joe Ingresia could whistle it perfectly. He had perfect pitch, and he could just go up to a phone and whistle it off, which earned him the nickname the Whistler, which kind of started this whole handle thing in the hacker scene, as far as I'm concerned. But Bill actually used one of these, which, if you've ever taken an elementary school music class, you will instantly recognize as a recorder. To this day, I've never figured out how the hell he made that sound with this thing. I think it's impossible, but he apparently did it. If anyone can figure it out, get in touch with me, and I will make a church for you or something. But yeah, basically, they could play this tone that would cause the trunk that they were on to... I don't know the technical aspects of this. So it's kind of before my time. But basically, it would drop the trunk so that they could make a call out anywhere they want, which was really cool for them. And a lot of people used it, and as people used it, they started to discover other cool little electronic devices they could have, like the red box or the black box or mute box, whichever one you want to call it. The red box was cool. I don't have a picture of it, but I actually have here. What they would do is, a lot of times they would take a little Radio Shack pocket tone dialer like this, and you could modify it to where it will play the tones that a payphone would make when you insert money. So that if you played them into the payphone would go, oh, hey, that's the money, so here's your free open line to call whatever, which a lot of people use, and people still use it to this day in some parts of the country. And then there was the black box, which I also don't have a picture of, which basically you hook it up to your line at home, and it just makes it so that the phone... people were inventing them and taking the same ones and renaming them, and it became just a big, ugly mess after that. But with these first three boxes, people thought it was cool. And eventually, people who weren't really interested in the exploration part of it realized, hey, I can use this so I don't have to pay. So I'm going to use this all the time. And phone companies started to say, oh, that's not a good thing. So they started introducing different switching systems. Originally it was called in-band signaling, which allowed you to play the tones down the same line that you're talking on. And so they changed that so you couldn't do that. They started muting handsets on phones until you put the money in so that you couldn't play tones into it, and all sorts of fun stuff like that. But, you know, people, you know, the phones started to change, and so people started to find new ways to have fun with them. But eventually, the payphone industry, at least, started to take a slow dive and to kind of the death that it's in today. And it was surprisingly, for the most part, not because of these people scamming free calls. It was because of this. And I'm not talking about that old guy. I'm talking about the Zach Morris phone. And all the cell phones that have come after it. The Zach Morris phone wasn't really have a big impact on the payphone industry itself, because at the time, really the only people who had them were like high-paying executives and Zach Morris. But, you know, as the technology gets cheaper and everything, people start to not really care about payphones anymore. And they start to pull them out. As you can tell from looking at, you know, a good example, if you walk right outside this room, there is a bank of where there used to be payphones. There's one payphone in this hotel that doesn't even work anymore. And so most companies are deciding, hey, this payphone thing just isn't worth the money to operate anymore. So in February 1st, I believe, 2001, my phone company, Bell South, decided that they're like, you know what? Screw this. We're done with this payphone thing. They either pulled out all their payphones from their booths, or they just sold them to other companies. And recently, I believe Quest Communications is starting to do the same thing. On a lower level, they're just starting to sell them off to independent companies. But I mean, with the invention of cell phones and the cheaper it gets, we start to get, especially with the customizable faceplates and ringtones and all this crap that makes it like a fashion statement to have your cell phone, it really puts us into this rainbow-colored, polyphonic, crazy frog hell that we live in today. And it really killed the payphone industry. And unfortunately, I think that that's really the end of it. I think that soon there are not going to be any more payphones, which is horrible, in my opinion. I think they're a great tool for people who are not, you know, who don't really have a cell phone. People who have a low income and can't afford to buy one. But unfortunately, this is the end of the payphone era as it was, and I guess we have to move on from there. But that is actually, I believe, going to be the end of this presentation, and I'm sure I wrapped up way early. And I'm glad you guys got here just in time. But now you're in time for the trivia with prizes. And actually, the first, as I trip over my own backpack, I got this painting here. This is an original painting by my fiance. Yes, I know. She's famous, I swear. I will give this to whoever can tell me who the first female operator in America was. Excellent. I will give this to the first person who raises their hand. Oh, shit. Yeah. I will give this to the first person who pays me money. No. Yeah. I don't know. Somebody come get this picture. It's free. we also have another one, which I'm sure I'll probably end up doing the same thing. I got this phone here, which is quite nice. And this question, actually, if you didn't get that one, this one's probably going to be a little bit harder. IBM has a subsidiary company that makes PBXs and phones and all sorts of cool stuff like that. And whoever can tell me the name of that company, no. Bonus points if you can pronounce it correctly. you can come get this phone. Okay. I should choose easier questions next time, I suppose. IBM, actually, the company they own is, it's spelled R-O-L-M. I have no idea in the world how to pronounce that word. As far as I can tell, it's Rome. Yeah, I have no idea. I just know that's what we use at my work, and that's where I got these phones. So, but yeah, I guess if anybody wants this, it's also free, except to the person who just got the painting. Yeah, so if anybody wants this, that's cool. If anybody has any questions or anything, now would be the time. Otherwise, and we got somebody in the back here. Yeah. Surprisingly, there is a lot, and a lot is not well documented in places that are easy to find. You do have, once the phone company started kind of deciding that payphones weren't really for them, a lot of independent companies started coming up and made what's called a COCOT phone, which is a customer-owned, coin-operated telephone. And that's basically, those are really evil little bastards. They don't operate in any way that normal payphones would on a, like, a background level. I mean, normal people see it and they're just like, payphone, I put money in, it makes a call. Cool. The internal workings are, for the most part, really screwy. They depend on phone to phone. I'm sure if I could get into, you know, each and every kind of COCOT company and the stuff that's inside the phone, this presentation would probably have been a lot longer than it is, which probably would have been a good thing. But yeah, I mean, there are a lot. There's a lot I didn't cover here. I wish that I had some time and all that good stuff, but unfortunately, I mean, I don't really know a lot about the whole COCOT industry and all that stuff in there. I just kind of went with what I could find information on. So. I'm actually not sure. I'm not totally certain about that. Yeah. He could probably answer this question for you.
A COCOT will work on a pipeline. It doesn't actually use a ground start, so you could actually, if you own one, you could actually hook up your own home line.
Yeah.
It generates all the billing in the phone on the DCB board. There's actually a switch you can turn it on.
So, yeah. So, yeah.
It actually generates dial tone.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Interesting. See, I wasn't aware of that. So, to answer your question, if you didn't hear him, it does it all inside the phone. There's little computer-type stuff inside there. Say what? Yeah. That's the technology part goes over my head. I do the history stuff. I
get. Bring a cutaway of like some electric cell or something.
No. I did get this. That's my prop. Any other questions from anybody? Oh, we got more people back here. What's up? In a sense, yeah, it's kind of a repeating cycle. Cell phones started out as just kind of this thing that people were kind of iffy about, but now it's like how payphones were before cell phones came around, where everybody was using them. You know, there were actually points where you'd had to stand in line for some places to use payphones. But I see cell phones going in the same way. I think they'll probably stay around for a lot longer than the payphones did, just because the technology is more convenient for people. It's easier for people to have this thing in their pocket that they can walk around with instead of having to, you know, be stuck to a wall for the most part. I think that It's starting to happen already. I think that's really where the next generation of phone phreaking is going to be. I mean, we've got voice over IP, which is a cool technology, and there's a lot of people playing with that. But I really see cellular technology being the next big thing that a lot of people are getting into. So. Yeah, as far as I know, there shouldn't be any issue with it because it's more or less just a standard phone. So.
Yeah. It powers off the line, so it would work.
Yeah. So.
What do you think about like the new hybrid stuff that's like half TV, half internet monitor, or half camera?
Well, actually, we don't have those. We don't have those where I'm from. I'd love to play with them. I really would. I could probably spend good hours playing with those things, but unfortunately, Bell South doesn't, you know, operate the payphones anymore, and I don't see COCOT companies throwing that much money out to try and get me internet access or something. So, yeah. Yeah, little data terminals and whatnot, but I don't know. I've never had a chance to play with them, so. I think it's an interesting technology. I want to play with them really bad, but there's just none available to me where I'm from, at least. Anyone else? As far as I know, on the newer switching systems, it does not work anymore. Or if it does, then they know that the phone company sees you using it, and you get busted for it. So, as far as I can tell, before I think it was like 30 minutes or something, supposedly, that you could use it on the older switching systems before you would get, you know, you had to get off the phone within 30 minutes or else they'd notice or whatever. But as far as I know, it doesn't really work anymore. Got somebody back here? It really depends. A lot of smaller, like places that have kind of smaller rural phone companies that still operate payphones will have older systems and they'll still use in-band signaling. It's possible in some places with some phone companies to unmute the handsets on the payphones and still use it. But really, I mean, it's kind of limited where you can and can't use it depending. I mean, I don't know all the places. I know in Georgia you can't, but basically anywhere that a phone company, the regional phone company still operates payphones, there's a chance you might be able to.